I'd like to look at Parshat Beshalach this year from perhaps a different vantage point than we have in the previous years. We know that Parshat Bo, the major theme is Yetziyah Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt. And next week's Parsha will be Parshat Yisro, which deals with Kabbalat HaTorah, the acceptance of the Torah. So therefore, Parshat Beshalach becomes the link, the bridge, between the exodus experience and the receiving of the Torah. And in order to take a nation who were subjugated for so many years and make them able to accept the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to accept Taryag Mitzvos, Parshat Beshalach has to be the bridge, has to be the medium in which these people can be transformed, that they were able to stand at Mamad Har Sinai and see such a Yiskalus Eloki, such a revelation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So I'd like to try to grapple with, what are some of the dynamics that are involved in this week's Parsha that enable Klal Yisrael to reach this level, to enable for Klal Yisrael to have some understanding of what it means to have a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then ultimately to see within our own lives how we can apply some of this, how we can access some of these ideas, also based on an idea from the Parsha. Perhaps to reframe our question, Rabbi Miller and Shabbat Shirin quotes Rav Huttner on a beautiful essay where he describes that in Kapitel 136 of Tehillim, we find the refrain, Ki lo lam chasto, that Kadosh Baruch Hu's kindness is everlasting, 26 times. And the Talmud tells us what is the significance of the 26 times that it says Ki lo lam chasto. So Talmud tells us, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that the 26 times correspond to 26 generations from the creation to the revelation at Sinai, who were fed by God's kindness alone. For during those generations, since there was no Torah and mitzvahs to observe, the people could offer nothing to Hashem in exchange for their sustenance. This is likened to an individual, a very poor person, who used to go to a rich person to ask for money. And the rich person would always constantly give this poor person money. But really, the poor person felt terrible. Every time he had asked for money, it was really much of an embarrassment. So the rich person decided and said to give this person a large sum of money, which he could build himself up in business, and therefore be able to support himself, and also return the money originally received from his benefactor. And this is the same thing with Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, at the time of Mamad Har Sinai, are moving from a transitional point of Ki lo lam chasto, where the world has been supported by Kadosh Baruch Hu without, so to speak, anything in return, what Rav Huttner terms as chesed vitur, kindness without calculation. And now it becomes a chesed mishpat, kindness which is a justified chesed, where we receive things based on our own efforts. And he notes that the weeks between the exodus from Egypt and the revelation at Sinai were weeks of effort during which the Israelites were given various mitzvahs. It's this period which heralded change from chesed vitur to chesed mishpat, from being mere recipients to being in a position to fulfill mitzvahs in return. And indeed, the Ramban notes on the pasuk of Sham Sam Lo Choko Mishpat V'Sham Nisau, when they went to Mara, and Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them some laws. So the Ramban notes that it doesn't say here, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Vaydaber Hashem Moshe. It doesn't use the normal language, which is a command of a Kadosh Baruch Hu giving a mitzvah. But rather, as Rashi points out, he gave the mitzvot sheet asku bahem that they'll be involved with. And notes the Ramban that those mitzvot that were given at Mara, that were given during this transitional time between Yetziyah Mitzrayim and the Kabbalas HaTorah, were very much along the lines where Avraham Avinu learned the Torah. And says the Ramban, v'hayazeh lahargilam b'mitzvot, it's in order to educate them in mitzvot, to get them used to them. V'ladani mikablu otam b'simcha v'tuv levav, and to see whether they accept them with happiness. That's v'sham nisahu, that's the nisayon, that's the trial, the test at Mara. This whole time is testing the waters to see if Klal Yisrael are able to accept the Taryag Mitzvos, they're able to accept this destiny which the Kadosh Baruch Hu has set for them. But that returns us to our original question. What allows them to go through this transition? What are the key building blocks that Klal Yisrael need in order to be able to stand at Mount Sinai? So I'd like to suggest there's one key building block, with a number of corollaries that come from it. And that key building block is found in a beautiful essay Rabbi Leff in Outlooks and Insights. And he notes that when Moshe Rabbeinu first is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu about the mission to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, so we find in the third parak that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "I declare that I'll bring you out of the wretchedness of Egypt to a land of the Canaan, Chiti, Amori, Prizi, Chivi, Yavusi, to a land flowing with milk and honey. You and the elders of Israel will then go to the king of Egypt. You must tell him Hashem, God of the Hebrews, revealed himself to us. Now we request that you allow us to take a 3-day journey into the desert to sacrifice to Hashem, our God." And the Mefarshim deal with a very obvious question. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu straight out that the purpose of his mission is to take Klal Yisrael out of Egypt, Eretz Yisrael, so how then do we explain that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to Paro and claiming that all he wants to do is take a 3-day journey to sacrifice to God, when we know from the outset that his whole intention was to take them out? And there are many answers given to this question. Among them, if you see how wicked Paro was, that even for 3 days he wouldn't let them out. Or for it was for Klal Yisrael's own needs, explains Roy Miller, that they psychologically needed to know that it wasn't like an all or nothing, that they were able to go back. And there are various answers offered. Rabbi Leff brings a fascinating insight, and I think it's this insight that's really the key to the parsha. He notes that the matzah, the bread of slavery, is at once the symbol of our slavery and the symbol of freedom. In the Pesach Haggadah, it is both poor bread and the symbol of how Hashem redeemed us in an instant. But Rabbi Leff notes, he says, it could be asked why a richer, more tasty cake was not chosen as a symbol of our redemption from the bitter slavery of Egypt. And the answer is that we did not cease to be slaves with our redemption. As the Gemara Megillah says, Haluka alu avdei Hashem, praise Hashem, give praise, you servants of Hashem, a pasuk in Tehillim, that originally we were slaves to Paro, and now we're slaves to Hashem. We did not emerge from slavery to freedom, we remained slaves with a new master. The Jew is the model slave, the model servant, accepting the yoke of the master of the universe. And that, he explains, is a beautiful understanding of the Tamidei Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachos about the halach of smicha geula l'tfila. We know that when we say the bracha of Gal Yisrael, that right after we say the bracha of Gal Yisrael, we immediately start Shmon Esrei. And there can be no break between Gal Yisrael and Shmon Esrei. So the normal understanding is because Gal Yisrael is as if we're knocking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu's door, we're asking for an invitation to speak to the king, and Shmon Esrei is HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, please come in, and our communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's not really polite that if we knock at HaKadosh Baruch Hu's door, that we have an interruption, and we say, hold on Hashem, give me a minute, and then I'll come back. But Tamidei Rabbeinu Yonah give another insight into why these two must be linked. And he says, because for a Jew, there is no hiatus. There's no free moment between redemption and the acceptance of God's yoke. That's why the two have to be together. Gal Yisrael, the redemption of Klal Yisrael, has to be linked. It is linked to the Shmon Esrei, to the yoke of heaven upon us. After our redemption continues, Rabbi Leff, we continue to dine on the brain of slavery to emphasize that our status as slaves had not changed. And he notes that our freedom is the freedom to be Hashem's servants. And this is the drasha that the tablets was engraved. Our freedom do not read engraved on the tablets, charut alucho, but rather chayrut, freedom on the tablets. Freedom is total immersion in Torah, total dedication, obedience to Hashem himself. Only when the Jew is able to express his deepest inner will, the thirst to do Hashem's will, is he truly free. He is no longer a slave whose inner will is suppressed and stifled by the yeast and the dough, the Yetzer Hara, with its infinite array of desires and lust that wrench one from submission to Hashem's will. Redemption from that enslavement is totally God's doing. We are passive objects when Hashem takes us into his jurisdiction. But we must now show ourselves worthy of freedom by displaying understanding of the implications of freedom from outside forces, a desire for the opportunity to subject ourselves to Hashem. Klal Yisrael were taken by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We were not really given an option whether we wanted to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's servants. We were taken out. We were redeemed by Hashem. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted so desperately that we ourselves should give of ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we should go through the Naseh V'Nishma at the moment of redemption. And therefore, explains Rabbi Leff, and this is the key, the ruler of the world did not need permission from Paro to take us out of Egypt. Therefore, Moshe did not approach Paro with a request to leave Egypt to settle in Israel. But the Jewish people, then under Paro's rule, had to show that they deserved Geula. That is why they positioned Paro for 3 days in the desert to sacrifice to Hashem. The nature of these sacrifices was not clearly defined even to Moshe. As he told Paro, for we do not know how we are to serve him until we get there. 3 days after leaving Egypt, Hashem told the newly freed Bnei Israel to return towards Egypt. As the Pasuk tells us, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, speak to the children of Israel and let them turn back and encamp before Pi'achirot. Between Migdol and the sea, before Ba'atzfon, you shall encamp opposite by the sea. And Paro will say, they're surely lost. And as Rashi notes, this was on the third day after their departure. Explains Rabbi Leff. 3 days after leaving Egypt, Hashem told the newly freed Jewish people, return towards Egypt. Return towards Egypt. Give up your newly acquired freedom. Cease running towards safety. And put yourself in the clutches of your oppressors. Here Klaisel finally got free after so many years. And what does Hashem tell them after 3 days? Go back. Turn back. Turn back into the hands of your oppressors. Why? Because Hashem wills it. And that was the sacrifice. After 3 days in the desert, not animal sacrifices, but the giving up of the thing most dear to them, their new freedom, that was the test of their worthiness for redemption. It's a fascinating insight. What was the concept of let us go for 3 days and sacrifice? Was it a lie? Chas v'shalom. It was emes lamiso. It was the absolute truth. After 3 days, Klai Yisrael undergo perhaps the greatest sacrifice imaginable. It's giving up their newly acquired freedom in their mind and returning back. And it was doing so because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu willed it. At that moment, they gave up their own mindset for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mindset. At that moment, they deserved redemption. And at that moment, they became Avdei Hashem, the servants of Hashem. And as the Rav points out in Reflections of the Rav, that although it may seem paradoxical, how can man be free if he surrenders his freedom? He notes that analysis of man's existential condition will be helpful. Is man ever truly free? Is he not a prisoner of natural law, of the state of health, of the intrusion of accident, and the ever-hovering specter of possible death? These are psychological constraints. Man is also subject to social pressures. In reality, supposedly free man is buffeted, pressured, coerced, and restricted in his options. Even if no human taskmaster hovers over him, these forces warp his initiative and deprive him of real freedom. In surrendering to Hashem, concludes the Rav, man truly achieves freedom. He is no longer tormented by psychologically depressed and anxieties about his health or the specter of death. The world is under the rulership of a beneficent God, and we achieve an identification with him by following his teachings. Man is thereby equipped to cope with all hostile and threatening forces. He is bolstered by his faith in the transcendental orderliness of things and Hashem's ultimate compassion. This is the key aspect. If you believe that there is a sense of order in this world, there's a sense of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mercy on every single person. We understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in every person. So then so much of our worries, so much of our anxieties in life can be suppressed because they're all being channeled toward that one understanding that there's someone taking care of me, that there is an order. It's like kivyachol, the child who has all these nightmares at night. But if the parent says, I'm here, I'm with you, I'm holding your hand, the child is now feel relieved. The child now understands that their anxiety can be handled because there's someone taking care of them. There's somebody who's there to hold them and be with them. This, my friends, is the aspect of the transition between the leaving of Egypt and Kabbalah Satorah. It's being able to give of ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's able, after 3 days, to return back to our oppressors and do it because Hashem wills it. That is the essence of what the transition is what is necessary in this transition of being able to give of ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'd like to look at three different aspects that we find within this larger rubric within our parsha. Aspect number one we'll focus in on, two and three we'll just mention briefly. The Klal Yisrael are by the sea, and Paro is approaching, and they see that Egypt is journeying after them. They're very frightened, and they cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rashi says they took that which the forefathers did, the Umnos Avosam, and they started davening to Hashem. Ask the Destar of Yerucham. He says, what is Rashi trying to teach us? Of course we know that Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they all daven to Hashem. What does it mean that Klal Yisrael took that aspect, those tools that the Avos, that the forefathers used, and used them in this case? How are we to understand what is Rashi trying to be mechadish here? What is the novelty in Rashi's interpretation? So Rabbi Yerucham, who lived right at the time of the beginning of World War I, he died in the late 1930s, Mashkiach of the Mir Yeshiva, he writes, and he writes so beautifully, he says, Hisponanti b'inyan l'raglei harudifot hayumot kayom. He says, I'm looking at all these terrible oppressions that Klal Yisrael are going through today, in particular by the Germans and the Russians who should be cursed. And he says, you see here that the Jewish people are losing their rights, the most minimum rights, and they're doing terrible things to them, and nobody is opening a mouth and saying anything against them. He says, Eitz hara gedola liyakol ve'ech mimena nechaleitz. This is a terrible oppression for the Jewish people. He says, Amarti l'nashi min ha-meitzar karatika, I said to my soul, from the depth I'm going to call out to you, Hashem. There's nobody to turn to but to Hashem. And then says Rabbi Rucham, and after I thought about this, tekef amarti nafshi lehefech, I immediately said to myself, hold on a second. Was there anybody to turn to beforehand? Now I feel like we have to turn to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And beforehand, when things were going well, we didn't have to turn to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he says, when I thought about this, I felt better. Ein achinami, there's no difference. When things are going well, and when things are going difficult, there's nobody to turn to but a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he says, that gave him tanchumim dolim v'chizuk nifla, a tremendous amount of chizuk, a tremendous amount of encouragement. And he says, with this we can understand what Rashi means of Tafsu Umnot Avotam. We learn the Sod HaTfilah, the secret of prayer. When we look at Klal Yisrael at this moment, they are clearly Be'et Sarah, they're clearly in a difficult position. They have the sea on one side, they have Parum on one side, they have the desert on one side, they have nowhere to turn to. When we look at the forefathers, we look at their prayers seem to be said at times when they're not under any oppression, any difficulties. Yitzchak Avinu is going lasuch basadeh. He's going meditating in the field when he davens mincha. Yaakov Avinu, after 14 years in Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever, Amram Avinu, they're all davening at a time of peace. But here comes the key point. Ulam migalim lanu chazal gadol teutenu bazeh. Our rabbis are teaching us our mistake in this. It's very important for us to know, ki avot hakdoshim, our holy forefathers, af b'matzavam hanoach, even when things were going well, hitpalalu tamid mitoch tachlit halachat, they always felt this pressure, that we're always dependent on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That same feeling of dependency that Klal Yisrael felt at the sea. What does it mean that they took this aspect of the forefathers? What Rashi is teaching us is that the aspect of the forefathers is that at all times we need to pray with an understanding that we are dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At all times we need to pray that our lives are dependent every moment on where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is at. Klal Yisrael at the sea were able to feel this most intensely. The Avos felt this at all times. This is the lesson we need to understand, that while the Goyim have Eila Berechav, Eila Basusin, that they have the horses and chariots, we only have Anachdu B'Shem Hashem Nafkir. We only have Kadosh Baruch Hu to turn to. This is the secret. This is the aspect of what Tefillah is about. It's a hakara gemura. It's a complete understanding. Ki ein kol matzav loto yitbarach ein od milbado. There's no one except for Kadosh Baruch Hu. This was the level that the Avos understood, even when things were going well. Perhaps with this insight, we can explain that famous machloket between the two Rishonim, the Rambam and the Ramban, whether tefillah, whether the Shemoneh Esrei is mandatory from the Torah or from the rabbis. Maimonides is under the opinion that tefillah is one of the mitzvahs. He numbers it as the fifth mitzvah of l'avdil l'b'chol l'vavchem, to serve Hashem with your whole heart. And it's indeed one of the basic mitzvahs in the Torah. Well, the Ramban says, yes, tefillah is very important. And it's a privilege that Kadosh Baruch Hu listens to the tefillah of a person, but to daven is only rabbinically mandated. The only time that it's biblically mandated, says Nachman, and he says the Ramban, is in Eitz Sarah, is in a difficult time. Where the Pasuk tells us that when a terrible difficulties come upon people, then one needs to cry out to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So says the Rav, the views of Maimonides and Nachmanides can be reconciled. Both regarded prayer as meaningful only if it is derived from a sense of sara, of difficulty. But they differ in their understanding of the word. Maimonides regarded daily life itself as being existentially in straits. This is this aspect that we need to feel. That every day we're in an eight sara, every day we're in a difficulty. And then even the Ramban would hold that in a difficulty, you have to call out from the Torah to daven to Hashem. And the Rav in the essay, Yonati B'Chagveya Sela, develops this idea. And he says that man's insecurity lies at the very root of prayer. Without man's insecurity, there would be no prayer. The latter's response to human insecurity stemming from the Mamakim awareness. Prayer bears witness to the unalterable fact that man is always in need. And it continues, when is prayer meaningful? When it dawned upon man, and modern man is too foolish and is not conscious of it. That his situation is a tragic one. That he's utterly defeated, that there's no one to help him but Hashem. Of course, the question immediately rises, if the crisis awareness is indispensable for prayer, how can prayer be recited daily at times of peace and prosperity and success? How can we say, Rafa'inu Hashem v'nerafei, if just this morning he came from the doctor and gave him a thorough checkup and a clean bill of health? What meaning does Rafa'inu heal us have? What meaning does Baruch Aleinu have if he has a rich bank account? Does it have meaning? Apparently it does. The insecurity of man, now he is healthy. How he'll feel the next morning, he does not know. The finite awareness of man lies at the root of the idea of prayer. And prayer in Judaism is not just a recital, it's a world outlook, a way of life. This is what we need to understand. That if we understand the basic rubric of our parsha is a dependency on a Kadosh Baruch Hu, where you see this borne out so clearly is the aspect of what tefillah is about. Where tefillah is on an everyday level, one feels it's a sorrow, this difficulty, that just like the Avos understood that even when things are well, we have to understand our dependency on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We live with this insecurity. And more than that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants so much for us to connect with Him. As Rabbi Nissel points out in Rick Shalev, he says, although it seems totally counterintuitive, all our problems are in fact nothing more than a means to have a relationship with Hashem. Every challenge, pain, and moment of suffering, from the anguish of Adam Rishon, when he opened his eyes for the very first time, to the agony of the birth pains of the Mashiach, they all exist so that man can connect to Hashem. The act of prayer is not a solution to man's inadequacy. Rather, man's inadequacy is an opportunity for prayer. And our challenge is to internalize this crucial point. When life seems to be good, we sometimes see prayer as a chore, part of our daily ritual, which we squeeze in between brushing our teeth and breakfast. When life seems to be bad, we rush to our siddurim to solve our problems. In fact, all the events of life are just roads to prayer. When the road is smooth, Hashem is challenging us to acknowledge that we can take nothing for granted and are totally dependent on Him. And when the road is rocky, He's giving us the opportunity for extra intensity in prayer. This is the aspect of what prayer is about. The aspect of relationship, the aspect of connection. This was the second level that Klal Yisrael had to understand. When they stood at the sea, You understand that life is about turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The life is about what tefillah is all about, the understanding of our total dependency on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this has to be a prerequisite in order for us to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to accept Tariq Mitzvot. I think the other two levels, which we'll look at very briefly, are also crucial when we talk about relationship, when we talk about what our connection with the Kaddish Baruch Hu is. The third is a lesson that was learned at Mara. We know that the Jewish people came right after the crossing of the sea. The Pasuk says that they had no water to drink. Moshe Rabbeinu cries out to Hashem, and Hashem showed him a tree. He threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. And there he established for the nation a decree and an ordinance, and there he tested it, as we mentioned earlier. So our rabbis tell us in the Tanchuma that what was it that sweetened the water? So it was a davar mar. It was bemar mirapet tamar. It was a bitter tree that was thrown into the water, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu sweetened the water. And that's what it means, vayareu Hashem eitz, as the Siftei Chaim points out. It doesn't say vayareu, and he showed him, but rather vayareu, he taught him. Horeu b'drachav, Kadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu and Klal Yisrael a lesson in the Darchei Hashem, in the ways of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That sometimes it's through the bitterness in life. It's sometimes through the difficulties and challenges in life that is the way we are able to establish a closer relationship with Hashem. It is through the bitterness that sometimes, through the difficulties, that we're able to find the sweetness, that we're able to find this aspect of relationship. And this is the second aspect of what comes from this idea of relationship and trust. It's the ability for us to understand that if we're ready to give ourselves up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times, we're ready to understand that life is an Eitz Tzara, so that we're ready to appreciate that when difficulties come our way, when the water is bitter, it's sometimes through bitterness and more bitterness that ultimately things become sweet. It's ultimately through working through these aspects that we're able to come to a level of closeness with Hashem. As he points out that this is what the Psukei Dezimra are all about. The Dezimra is not only the songs, but comes from the concept of Lizmor to prune. The Psukei Dezimra allow us, before we come one-on-one with Hashem, to prune our hearts from our questions, from our difficulties in life, by looking at the world in its totality, by looking at nature, by looking at history, by seeing things in a much more global sense. In that way, it prunes those aspects of our hearts which have so much difficulties in our relationship with Hashem, and says, be able to see perspective. Right now things are hard, but where is this leading toward? What is the ultimate goal? What are we supposed to be gaining from this? And sometimes in life, it's so important to see that perspective to get us through the difficult times. Because if we just are in the moment, moment by moment, all we do is taste the bitterness. If we're able to see that from this bitterness comes sweetness, so then we're able to have the perspective that will help us get through this bitterness. The final aspect, where we see that this is really a training ground, where Kadosh Baruch Hu is training Klal Yisrael in terms of dependency, in terms of relationship, is clearly the whole story of the man. Where the Torah tells us that the children of Israel did so and they gathered. Whoever took more and whoever took less, they measured in Omer. And whoever took more had nothing extra, and whoever took less was not lacking. Everyone, according to what he eats, had they gathered. The next lesson that Klal Yisrael had to learn was, if you understand you're in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's hands, then you understand that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is so exacting with every single person, exactly what they need in order to give them down to the minute iota of exactly what an individual needs in the service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and what they need in this world. The next lesson Klal Yisrael had to learn was the lesson of trust, faith, dependency on the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he takes care of every single person wherever they are at, exactly what this person needs. And then the Torah continues, Moshe said to them, no man may leave over from it until morning. That's the final lesson. The lesson of the man is not only the lesson where HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides every person what they need, but he provides every person what they need by yom b'yomo, every single day. And that's what we need to understand. That we have to focus in life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving each one of us. HaMechadish b'tuvo b'chol yom tamin ma'aseh b'reishi. Every single day he gives us that which we need in order to do the Ritzon Hashem, in order to be able to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Klai Yisrael, who went to sleep at night without any food in the cupboard, had to learn for 40 years over and over again this dependency on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that was the prerequisite, again, for Mamad Har Sinai. What it means to accept the yoke of Torah is to accept that we are dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means that we understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's best for us in life. Bimar, with the bitterness, sometimes the bitter becomes sweet. And finally, we learn that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every single person, at every single moment, provides the needs that that person needs in their toolbox to be an Eved Hashem, a servant of Hashem. How do we access these levels? How do we tap in our own lives, to the lesson, these lessons that Klai Yisrael learn? How do we develop ourselves that we're sensitive, we're intuitive, that we can attach ourselves to this feeling of being Avdei Hashem, the servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So I'd like to suggest that it's really found in one phrase in the Shir HaSayam. When Klai Yisrael are standing by the sea and they sing that beautiful Shira, they say that famous line of Zeh Keli, this is my God, Ve'ambehu, and I will exalt him. And there are many drushes in the Gemara, what does this mean, Zekeli van Vehu? I'd like to focus in on two. The first, van Vehu, beautify him in mitzvot. Make a beautiful sukkah, a beautiful lulav, a beautiful tzitzis, a beautiful sefer Torah, etc. The second is Abba Shaul, van Vehu is composed of two words, ani vahu. I will make myself like him. Model yourself on him. Just as he is kind and merciful, you too should be kind and merciful. These two ideas, I think, form the crux of an approach of how we can access godliness and the fundamental aspects of Emunah that are found in our parsha. Item number one is the concept of Hiddur Mitzvah. It's a concept of investing in the mitzvah performance that we do. What does this mean? It means, as Rav Pam points out in Atar Lamelech, that it's not only investing in mitzvos ben adam l'makom, but investing in mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro as well. What is the greatness of investing in mitzvos? It very simply means that a person says, I care enough to make it beautiful. And when you go the extra mile, whether it's ben adam l'makom, by finding a beautiful esrog, by finding beautiful Shabbos candlesticks, beautiful kiddush cup, beautiful challah cover, it's by going the extra mile ben adam l'chaveiro, that when you bring food to somebody who just had a baby or somebody who's sick, that you wrap the food in a beautiful way, you put cellophane around the grapefruits to make it look beautiful, you decorate it in an attractive way. When you write a letter to somebody, you find a beautiful card. You spend a little bit more time thinking about what you're going to write. Anytime a person takes those extra couple of minutes and invests and thinks and put his mind to it, that's a reflection that he cares and it matters to him, and this is but a reflection of that. How do we connect? How do we access? By doing Hiddur Mitzvah. By beautifying the mitzvahs, what we're saying is, I want to have a relationship. I want to invest in this relationship. I want to make it as beautiful as possible because it means something to me. It's important to me. As Rav Moshe points out, just as a person will speak lovingly of beautiful things, of a new acquisition that perhaps they got, a new car, a new furniture, and how beautiful it is, and they'll tell their friends all about it. That's the way we should feel about mitzvot, that we should beautify them and talk about them, that we feel pride in this. That feeling of pride, that investment, allows us a feeling of connection, a feeling of wanting to be part of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But Rav Pam Zatzal takes it one step further, and he notes,
He says, Yesh odin yan shel hidur mitzvah, milvad ha'idur b'chesta shel mitzvah. Hidur mitzvah is not just in the object of the mitzvah to beautify it, but rather v'hu ba'ofen asiyata, d'haynu b'simchat ha'lev u'bishtokikus u'bizlavus shel ahava. How do you do a mitzvah? That is really the key factor in how you view a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Do you have hislavos? Do you have enthusiasm? Do you have passion? Do you have love? Do you have longing? Do you have desire? Hidur mitzvah is not just that we have a beautiful Shabbos, you know, Kiddush cup and candlesticks and challah cover. It's much more than that. How do we approach Shabbos? Do we have a passion and enthusiasm for Shabbos? Do we prepare ourselves accordingly that we're bound to meet a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Kedusha of Hashem, every Shabbos? What Hidur mitzvah is that we put of ourselves emotionally, psychologically, spiritually into the mitzvahs that we do. That's really the aspect of Hidur mitzvah. That's the beauty of Zekei Levan Vehu. And I think if we invest in this aspect, what we're really doing is investing in this relationship. And by investing in this relationship, what we're really ultimately going to achieve is that feeling of closeness, that feeling we can rely on a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that feeling that we are enveloped by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It is so difficult if we have such a distant relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu to then feel that at every moment we're dependent on Him. But if we're somehow able to bridge that gap, if we're somehow able to hold on to that relationship by the way I do the mitzvot, so then it becomes much easier to feel that level of dependency and really that level of closeness. And I think the final idea is a beautiful insight of the Siftei Chaim. He says, when Klal Yisrael saw Kadosh Baruch Hu and they said Zekei Li, they then added Ve'anvehu, and I will beautify him. Immediately, when they had this moment of Hisarurus, this moment of awakening, they said, what am I going to do about it? How am I going to respond to this? And he says, this is the Yisod Gadol Amanukan. This is a major principle we learned here. Shekol HaSagah Ruchanit SheAdam Masig. Anytime we feel spiritual, anytime we achieve any spiritual level, U'bechol Derech Shehi, Sarich Miyad L'Lamed Lekach. We immediately have to learn a lesson. We immediately have to put it into the world of the Maisa. Litbonein Ma'ani Yechol L'Mod V'Lakshim Yizeh. How can I bring this to my life? I think that second level of Vanvehu, Ani Vahu, I and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, to liken ourselves to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, is to try at all times when we become inspired to then ask ourselves, what can I do with this inspiration? How can I take this inspiration and grow from it? How can I take this inspiration and liken myself to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? How can I take this inspiration and allow this moment to be a moment that's going to be elevated? And I saw this so clearly with our 4-year-old, Kenai Nahara, who after her car accident, and when we called 911, she was taken to the hospital, and Baruch Hashem, she's okay. But subsequent to that, we've trained her that every time you hear a siren, that you should daven that the person should have a refuah shleima. When you have some type of experience that happens in life, the question is, how then do you take that experience and implement that in your life? How then can you take that and see what is l'maaseh? What aspect can I grow from this in our own personal lives? What is the meaning of this? And this is the key. The question we have to ask ourselves is, do we go through life alone and occasionally we bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu in? Or is our whole mindset of our lives connection? Our whole mindset is, how can I grow closer? And if that is our mindset, that when events happen, when we're inspired, when we're touched, when something major happens, or even something minor happens, and it breaks us out of our routine, and for a moment we feel something, for a moment we connect to a deeper part of ourselves, the question immediately has to become, what now can I do at this very moment to bring myself closer to relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Because if you really desire that relationship, you really want to be enveloped with Him, then you're going to look for opportunities of Vani Vahu to emulate Him. Look for opportunities to connect with Him. And this is the key. How can we reach these levels of the aspect of faith, the aspect of being connected and feeling at all times in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's hands, it's only if we're able to develop on a constant level this feeling of closeness, this feeling of relationship. And that's our struggle, and that's our challenge. It's that kelivan vehu, to look for opportunities to point, that's the Kadosh Baruch Hu. I see his hand so clearly in my life. Vanvehu, this is what I'm going to do because of it. This is what my behavior is going to be. This is how I'm going to act. And therefore, in conclusion, what I believe Parsha B'Shalach does, looking at the Parsha more in the realm of a forest rather than the trees, is to inculcate within Klal Yisrael this key aspect of our dependency on Hashem. Go back after 3 days, sacrifice to God, give your free will to God. Stand at the sea and understand that this is what our forefathers understood. We're always at an etzara, or always at a difficult time. Understand that the bitterness is really in order to sweeten things. Understand that the man falls every day, every person exactly what they need. Understand that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is there giving us every moment his love, his compassion, his guidance. The question is, where are we? Are we open to this? Are we responsive to this? Doing mitzvos with passion, with enthusiasm, beautifying the mitzvos, making it part of our lives, it's something we're proud of, something that's special, opens us up for that relationship. And when great things happen, when spiritual moments happen, if we're able to grab those moments, we're saying we're not walking alone in life, we're walking with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And these aspects help a person be able to feel that closeness, and then they're able to appreciate that that dependency we have on a Kadosh Baruch Hu is like a child who has tremendous trust in the parent, and that we understand that just like a parent knows what's best for the child, likewise we understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what's best for us. And perhaps in conclusion, as a final idea, the beautiful insight of Rav Hirsch on the verse, Ish of every person must fear, revere their mother and their father and keep the Shabbos, I am Hashem. Says Rav Hirsch, what is the connection between the elements of the Pasuk? That when a child is able to have a relationship with a parent, that becomes the building blocks and the stepping stone of a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we need to take those relationships that we have in life and use them as our model for our ultimate relationship with Hashem. And the trust that a child has with their parent, the trust that a baby has, that no matter where they're at, they're always in their mother's arms, is that feeling that we need to have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that wherever we are, we're in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's arms, holding us, carrying us, and directing us in life. And we, like the child, are ready to give of ourselves completely to that notion.